In the UK, for example, at the moment, there's been a big push against avocado, and you're seeing a lot of people shift towards peas and using peas in a kind of similar avocado-like mixture for breakfasts and salads and things like this. And these kinds of shifts are really interesting when you start to look at sustainability of a particular ingredient in a particular part of the world and going, ooh, what are the alternatives here?
Welcome back to the Your Great Podcast with your host, cheeky beanie eater, Unique Hammond. Today, I sit with Paul Newman, who currently leads the SDGE Advocacy Hub, a network convened to connect NGOs, advocacy groups, civil society, private sector, and the United Nations agencies around sustainable development to end hunger, achieve food security, and improve nutrition, and promote sustainable agriculture by 2030. We had such a fascinating conversation because Paul is really focused on increasing legume consumption globally over the next 5 years. And I just thought it was so wonderful. The education, the recipes, he's getting chefs involved under a project called Chef Manifesto. He's got a wonderful podcast out called Future Fork. So there's just a lot. Paul is just a deeply passionate person around legumes. And obviously, I am deeply passionate about legumes myself. So it was just a really fun educational conversation for me on so many levels. I hope you enjoy our conversation. And I hope you will follow the Instagram, Beans is How, and really check out Paul's work, because I feel like it's such an important conversation that gets lost in the health the Instagram health conversation, really, because people are fighting over these myths around nutrients instead of really just zooming out and looking at the big picture. So love this conversation, and I hope you enjoy it as well. Paul, welcome to the Your Great Podcast. We were just chatting before I hit record, and I was saying that I've been slinging beans for 11 years and getting my clients to incorporate beans in their life. I grew up on beans as one of eight kids, and food's expensive. And so, you know, beans were kind of part of the landscape, which I didn't even think about till much later in life. Your Instagram came to my attention. I don't even remember how, but Beans is How. And I was like, wait, there's somebody out there slinging beans, because there's an interesting landscape of people who are like, beans are bad. And you're like, what are you talking about? Beans are amazing. So how did you come to beans?
Firstly, thank you for having me on, and always great to talk with a fellow bean slinger. So no, absolutely. And yeah, so how I came to beans. So beans kind of came to me. So I've been working on food system transformation, leading an organization that works at the intersection around food, agriculture, and nutrition. And so we are working across the UN, private sector, civil society around their sustainable development goals. And as part of that, we're looking always at the big challenges we face in our food system. So we're looking at the challenges around agricultural impact on food and water systems, our soil, looking at the nutritional challenges of our modern diet that we have now, and then also looking more recently at some of the challenges around cost and affordability of foods. And so as we were looking through that, I was involved in the United Nations Food System Summit, which the Secretary General pulled together in 2021. And I was helping on leading some of the public engagement work there. And as part of that, we were bringing together lots of thought leaders from across the ecosystem, scientists, agronomists, chefs, other food companies. And we were in one particular meeting where we were sitting there, and a chef actually came on. His name's Sam Cass. He was the chef for the Obamas in their first term at the White House. And the second term, he was heading up food policy for the White House. And Sam is always, he's a good friend. He's very practical, but he got into this call and he goes, okay, guys, this all sounds super complicated, trying to change the food system. He said, what if we could all just focus on one thing? Focus on something we can all agree on and that most people wouldn't have a problem with, they kind of get, is good for, it's a win-win-win. And he said, let's just eat more beans. and double the bean consumption. And straight away, that resonated with a group of people in the room that were less animated up until that point. They were kind of listening to the debates going back and forth. And then they were like, oh, this sounds, you know, interesting. So they lent in. And so we took that conversation and worked with it for a little while and started to say, what if we did think about food system transformation in this way, which is just having a bit of a focus, sharpening that, and helping people to understand some of the things they can be doing rather than telling them all the things they can't be doing or the things that are wrong, but focusing on something positive, focusing on a solution that is multi-pronged. And so that's where beans came from. And for me, then it was a journey of discovery where I was exposed to some of the best scientists, to the bean slingers, the bean lovers around the world. And as I did, I started to learn more and more about the potential of beans, the potential for our microbiome, for helping our gut, for, you know, the fact that there was a lot of conversation around alternate protein, but really it's a fiber conversation that we need to be having, and macronutrients. And so all of these things just really started to come out. And so through that, my own discovery of beans, which had been always there, but not at the level that it is now. So I've kind of really leaned into that bean ecosystem. And the campaign that we launched came out as a result of that journey.
That's so beautiful and organic and natural how you came to beans, because people, I find, feel one way or the other about beans. They're either passionately, oh, I love beans, I grew up with beans, or they're like, oh, beans are the worst, I don't eat beans, or I don't know how to eat beans. You know, I think there's a lot of that as well. Like, how do you incorporate them? And one of the things that immediately caught my eye about beans is how, is that you're actually helping bridge that gap of, here is how you can bring them into your diet, and here's why they're so good for you. And you do a really lovely job educating on that. So I am curious, do you eat beans daily?
I do. I eat them almost every day. Yesterday, I had them twice for lunch and dinner. Be honest, I'll fess up. I had a bit of a disaster yesterday because I left my prep too long. And so I was in a rush. And so we did have some beans. They weren't probably as well prepared as they could be, but it was good. So I do eat beans and encourage kind of people to try and incorporate them in different ways into their diets every day.
Do you find that there's any resistance to that? Because I see that you're also out in the field. How do you bridge, and are there beans in every country that you go to? Like, what is the bean conversation?
Yeah, so we've looked at beans in a broad sense, and we've kind of included peas and lentils. So we've kind of looked at that whole family, but talking about it from a beans perspective rather than a beans, peas and lentils, or pulses, or legumes. It gets kind of complicated, the technical terms. And so what we found was we need some way of simplifying that for everyday people. And so beans are what people go into a shop and buy, or peas or lentils. But when you look at beans, peas and lentils around the world, you do find that almost every culture in the world, there is a history of some form of bean, pea or lentil that's a part of their culture, that indigenous communities ate, that they harvested. And, you know, you can find back in history right through to the Stone Age, beans in digs in the Library of Alexandria. You know, there's lots of places where you can see these ingredients. And so what I like is the fact that they are so diverse. It's a big, diverse family. It's not just asking people to eat one thing. And diversity in our diets is one of the big challenges we face. And so there's a huge amount of ways for people to really get into this space. You can eat them fresh, you can eat them dried, and, you know, there's all kinds of dishes you can add them to. They're also incredibly affordable. And so in the majority of the world, they're quite affordable. Some parts of the world, their price is going up as their value is increased, and also as overall food prices are going up. But generally speaking, they're still, compared to other protein sources, other kind of more complete foods that people are looking at, you're finding that they're still very accessible in that sense, or more accessible. In terms of your question just around, you know, people being, again, there's a lot of myths around them. And so there's a lot of mythology, and particularly in certain parts of the world, there you know, countries will have different myths based on how they've eaten beans. So, you know, in the US, you hear a lot about gas, for example, and you'll get people that are more, there's kind of levels, but, you know, gas will start at one, everyone can talk about the gas in beans and how they don't work with their gut. Others will then start to get into things like, you know, anti-nutrients and all these other things, which are kind of little ideas that they've heard somewhere and then they've kind of repeated. And when you actually dig into that and you talk to the experts and you talk to nutritionists, they will tell you that it's often because of a lack of fiber that, you know, these kinds of things are happening in our guts. Our guts are reacting to that kind of injection of fiber. And so we need to let them normalize or we need to let them balance. They would also say that having a bit of gas is actually a good thing. It's kind of like fermentation. It's like the little bubbles coming. And so it actually shows that your gut is actually functioning and that when it is functioning properly, the odor is gone. You know, it's actually quite a normal thing. And that's something we should, a very good friend of ours who's a nutritionist from the UK, she often talks about in a very British accent, her name's Alison, and she'll talk about the party in your pants, which, you know, from in that British accent is quite humorous, but she will talk about that being a real sign that your gut is, your microbiome is functioning. And I think to me, those kinds of little insights are really helpful for helping people to break down the myths around these kind of things that they use as excuses, I guess, to eat more beans and get more engaged. But when you look at the diversity of dishes, the way you can use them, the flavors that you can create, it's just amazing. And so it's really, in many parts of the world, you know, a lack of imagination or effort rather than actually, you know, finding ways to utilize beans, peas, or lentils.
And the affordability is such an important key because I think people think to be healthy, and I know that you're not necessarily trying to solve the be healthy part, it's more the food crisis, right, and environmental. But in my world, beans are an incredible way to support a healthy diet, to support getting all these nutrients, feeding the gut microbiome, as you said. Gas is a third party entity. It's your gut microbiome going, hey, we're having a party in here, you know? And it's for some of my clients, they'll get gassy for the first month that they're incorporating beans and then it normalizes. And the body's like, oh yeah, this is part of our diet. You know, you've fed the microbiome. And so, you know, it's, to me, it's beautiful that you chose beans or that beans chose you because they offer layers of, you know, not just easy to grow is one of them, right? They're not a hard plant to grow. I've watched enough of your videos to know that they pull nitrogen from the air and infuse it into the earth. So they're also giving back, right? Beans are giving back in a lot of ways. And the affordability part for something so nutritious. That's why when I hear people bad mouthing beans, I'm like somebody saw me cooking beans on my Instagram and saying they also have ergothionine, which is a longevity nutrient that is in mushrooms, which I was posting around recently. And somebody was like, oh yeah, but they're anti-nutrient and full of glyphosate. And I'm like, that's such an uneducated conversation to have, you know, like to assume that that's why you should stay away from beans. I can't, like, what? So what are some of the bean myths that you've bumped up against? And also you said each country has a different mythology around it. I'd love to hear some of those.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting once you kind of start digging into it. And there is these kind of different agendas which come out. So, you know, there's some people will eat beans who, because they're trying to, they're vegan or they're vegetarian and they really are looking for a protein source. And so protein is an interesting one where people will say that they're an incomplete protein. But if you actually eat beans with a whole grain of any sort, so like beans on toast, beans with a brown rice, any of those kinds of things, which you should be eating in a whole diet anyway, is having some whole grains, then you're going to get them a very complete version or a complete protein. And so for me, some of these myths around it's an incomplete protein or it's, you know, not giving you the same level as an animal product, you know, when you actually look at what you get in beans, you also get the fiber, you also get the micro and macronutrients, the folate, you know, all of the other elements which are in there. And I think we have, in many parts of the world, really had a protein fixation that is not necessarily logical. So it's been this idea we need more protein. And I think definitely in North America, there's this assumption that people are, if they don't have enough protein, they're not going to build muscle mass and be healthy. In other parts of the world, like in India, we do have a protein problem where not everyone is getting enough. So you've got these different parts of the world which have different approaches here. For us, it's been a question of also how do you build out that narrative to actually also talk about things like fiber? Because I think fiber is a major issue in places like North America. And that's one of the major issues that's being kind of discovered by people like yourself and put out there, but also I think will become the next big thing in terms of the deficiencies of fiber in people's diet. And beans give you both the protein and the fiber together in a package. And so for me, these kinds of things are really critical for helping people. I think one of the other myths around beans is because they are affordable, they're seen as cheap. And when we think of things as cheap, we often devalue them. And so this has been an issue where, you know, I know in my part of the world, when you're at college, you would eat beans, you know, out of a can on toast, and that would be a cheap meal. Or if you're having a tough spell and you're in a kind of food kitchen or soup kitchen or something like this, people would be fed beans. Or in school meals, you would be fed beans. And so there's this perception that beans are cheap. And thus, when people start to earn more money, they move away from beans, or they start to eat more, less sophisticated foods in many ways. But what I think is really a challenge is how do we actually also talk about the value of beans and talk about that and add that value in that completeness and that simplicity in some ways, but also, yeah, really looking at what you get from them. And so I think that's one of the big myths as well that we have to counteract is that beans are cheap and thus they're not as sophisticated, yet they are, and they give us so many benefits.
Yeah, that one kills me. I actually save money and I'm healthier eating beans. So to me, it's like calling it peasant food is just, I just giggled.
You can also find really you can buy quite unique and specific bean varieties that are heirloom varieties that are the most beautiful ingredients and that are, you know, small batch. And like, so there's all kinds of ways to find elevated beans as well, if it's a status thing from that perspective.
Oh yeah, you can always find a way to spend more money for sure. You know, you can,
but we don't need to.
Bye. Yeah. And I was also looking through your content and I thought it was so beautiful how you got these chefs involved. So tell me more about that part of the Beans Is How movement. Because what I also saw is that you wanted to double bean consumption by, was it 2028 or 2030? Yes. And I love that so much because honestly, it really helps my job having you out there advocating for beans because I've been doing it what feels like by myself for a while. There's bean people everywhere, put it that way. I call it the legume league. It's like I have a legume league. It's all of these people who in their families, in their neighborhoods are getting people to eat more beans. And then I found you and I was like, okay, you're getting people to eat more beans and doubling it. So how are you going to do that?
So sometimes when you set a goal, it's then you've got to work that out. And you know, so we set this goal of doubling it in 5 years. And that's when I talked to different scientists, that's what they said. So some of the brightest minds were kind of in the bean world said, it's going to take at least, you're going to need at least 5 years. And so we set that goal. What we're trying to do now is rally, and we have a network of 90 organizations around the world that have joined a coalition to try and work towards this common shared goal. And so it's literally that legume league. We call it the Beans Is How Coalition. And that group has worked, we've worked with a science and innovation advisory group that's helped develop a theory of change. So that's essentially looking at that we're going to focus on two areas. One is looking at the policy frameworks that exist and how do we encourage more bean consumption in those policy frameworks. So in the US, that's looking at the dietary guidelines. So at the moment, there's a group called the Coalition for the Advancement of Pulses, which is looking to double the recommendation in the dietary guidelines in the US. Now, that would mean that schools, prisons, and military would be recommended a doubling of that consumption. And so there's things like that, which are policy recommendations, which then set public procurement and drive that forward. In other parts of the world, we're looking at school meal programs. We're looking at other elements around how beans are put forward from a policy perspective. The second part goes to the chef conversation, which is the demand creation. And so at the same time, you can change the architecture as such with the policy framework, but people still might not eat the beans. Like, just because you put them in front of them, it doesn't mean they're going to eat them. You've got to still change the demand. And so we've got to think about, how do we make them more desirable? And so we're working on that market by market, but the idea is to work with chefs to put more beans on menus, so that when you go to a restaurant, you can actually make a choice around beans and you can see them. And that might be a dish that's focused on beans, or it could be beans as part of a dish. We're not fussed about how you eat beans. We just want you to eat more. So what we've done is work with chefs to kind of put beans on the menu. So we did this in New York City during Climate Week. We had 60 plus restaurants putting beans on the menu. We're going to be working in other cities at the moment. So we're just looking at London. We're looking at Nairobi. We're looking at New Delhi. We're looking at other cities around the world where we're going to be working with chefs and restaurants to put beans on the menu. That's going to be in fine dining and more kind of accessible restaurants, and then also in corporate catering. So thinking about canteens, thinking about school canteens to company canteens, where beans can be provided as well. And so we've seen super exciting things where people are replacing pastas with bean pasta. We're seeing people working to develop new products and new accessibility. So it's been really amazing to see how that's starting to show up. But chefs have this ability to showcase, to highlight, to be able to elevate, and to also be able to excite us around food. And so we've been working in partnership with a number of chefs to do that.
That's really amazing. And honestly, like, I know this just because I've worked with thousands of people who literally are like, you can't find beans unless you're going to a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, and there's certain countries that are more legume heavy, but I have to say, I just went to Nicaragua and the locals were telling me that they all privately grow red beans, which I love red beans, by the way. I'm like, I buy big bags of them when I'm in Costa Rica or Nicaragua, but on the menus, there's no beans because they have it for their families, but they're like, oh, the gringos, they don't eat beans. So they're not on the menus anymore. Even when you go and get a taco, it's like, there's no beans. So this putting it in fine dining, occasionally in fine dining, I'll find a bean dish. And I'm always so excited to see that there. So I'm such a big fan of what you're doing. Literally, like, I'm fangirling you. People always call me and they're like, oh, Unique, you're a legume celebrity. And I'm like, of all the things I could be a celebrity for, it's going to be beans, because it's like an uphill battle to get people to eat beans. So the fact that you're putting it in restaurants and getting chefs excited about it, again, this cheap, wonderful, nutritious food. Like, why isn't it on every menu? Why isn't there a side dish or something with this incredible ingredient in it? And I love that you're using your mission to get it on menus.
Very exciting. We're trying to do what we can, but we need more collaborators. We need more people asking for beans on menus from restaurants, but then also, you know, demonstrating and showing that. So if people are interested in engaging, please think about, when you're out, go and ask people, say, where's the bean dish? Because often what will happen is restaurants will serve their staff meal will be a beans dish. Yeah. And it's often the most delicious, but then they just don't think that it's appropriate for putting on their menus for some reason. And so we've got to shift that.
Yeah. And are people pretty open? Are you finding that these chefs are open to it, or?
Chefs love it. Like, right. Chefs love beans. So they use them and they insert them into so many different things. So you've got to think, a restaurant is a business. And so ingredients are going up. So what do you need to do? You talked about at the beginning, your large family eating beans, you know, well, it's the same in a restaurant. You're trying to make ends meet. You're trying to work that out. So you need to think about ingredients which are more accessible, more affordable to build into your dishes. And so beans, peas, and lentils can become a really key element for doing that. But it also has a story. It also has a payoff in terms of health, in terms of environment, as well as that affordability. So it's kind of this win-win-win where you can then, you know, build that in. And so, you know, in the UK, for example, at the moment, there's been a big push against avocado. And you're seeing a lot of people shift towards peas and using peas in a kind of similar avocado-like mixture on, you know, for breakfasts and salads and things like this. And these kinds of shifts are really interesting when you start to look at sustainability of a particular ingredient in a particular part of the world and going, ooh, what are the alternatives here? How do we look at that? And peas are amazing, you know, in the UK. They can grow them. They have a lot. There's a lot of tradition there. So those kinds of shifts are really interesting that happen as well.
Yeah. And importing something like an avocado is nuts, right?
Yeah.
Just the footprint alone on that.
It depends where you are. But yeah, I mean, in California, it makes sense because they're grown there, or in Tanzania, or depending on where you are will depend on whether it makes sense. But in many parts of the world, it doesn't make sense. And so then you've got to look at diversification and what can you substitute with? What can you think about? And so this is where I think it's really key.
So you're getting involved with government as well, because as you just said, changing the food pyramid where you're actually, you know, putting beans in people's diets every day, which will help gut health so much, these different gut issues that people are having, is driven by the lack of fiber in the diets.
Yeah, so we definitely are working and seeing the role government plays. And so working to develop kind of policy, joint policy asks that we can go out to, working on how do you shift those areas in which you can kind of create more public procurement, because I think public dollars that are buying foods are also a really key for then what's grown. So a lot of farmers will rely on that. And so if you can get governments asking for certain foods or suggesting certain foods, it helps stimulate more growth of that industry, which then creates a platform for more investment from a farming perspective. Farmers will grow what people are buying, essentially. And so often people blame the farmer, but it's the farmers are growing what people are buying. And so what you've got to do is think about how does the system actually set up so that they can be successful as well. And thus, you know, farmers love growing beans, peas, and lentils. They're part of most crop rotations because they do fix nitrogen into the soil. They are very good from a soil health perspective. And depending on whether that's a regenerative or more traditional farm will depend on, you know, the approaches there. But legumes are very important in farming.
So it's the same as a chef owning a restaurant. If you're walking in and saying, hey, where are the beans? It creates supply and demand, you know, and the same is your main tactic is to educate around beans. And are you working with farmers as well to help them understand the power of growing beans? Like what is there, or is it just a multi-pronged approach to kind of make this happen?
So it's definitely multi-pronged, but we are coming at this from a consumption driving production. So we're starting that way where we're saying if the demand is increased, farmers will respond. Now, that being said, you've got to look at both ends. And so we are working with partners that are working on the development of new seeds and new varieties. So they're looking at breeding, crossbreeding for more higher iron or better water resilient or more flavor or less cooking time. So we do work with groups like the CGIAR, which is the largest crop research group that's in the world. And they've done a lot. There's a group as part of that called the Pan-African Bean Research Alliance, which has helped implement 360 plus different bean varieties over the last 25 years to help farmers. And they've introduced, and essentially some people get confused by what breeding is in plants, but breeding is essentially where you take two plants that have two different benefits. One might be a flavor, one might be a less water, and then you cross them. So it's not genetic modification, it's just normal breeding. It's happened for generations, but it's about two people coming together and you get something different. And so, but then learning how do you develop those unique new varieties and then also make them available to the market so that you can then introduce something different. So an example is high iron beans, which are a bean variety that's been pushed in Africa where there's iron deficiencies, but this bean variety is higher in iron. And so it's a great way of kind of biofortifying foods in a way to give people more iron in places where they don't have that and addressing anemia. So an example of how that's happening. But so we're working with those kinds of groups as well to elevate their work and talk about that, but at the same time really saying that's all fair and well, but you need people also demanding to eat beans and seeing them as something that's attractive and important for their own health and their own enjoyment.
Yeah, it's really elevating that conversation so that people are seeking them out instead of it being kind of an afterthought, right?
Yes.
It's driving that excitement. I think I heard you say on one of your podcasts that it's not about telling people, don't eat that, that's bad. It's more like, it's inviting them to a party of like, here's why you want to add this to your diet. It's an invitation to expand and do something that's not only incredibly good for you, but a part of a lot of longevity diets are beans. And people, you know, I think Dan Buettner has done a nice job to illuminate how a lot of the longest living people in the blue zones are eating these legumes as well. They're heart healthy, you know, they help with cholesterol. Like a lot of the issues that are happening in North America, where you see all of these diseases driven by the lack of eating this biodiverse food. I want to know, like, for people listening, how can they support your mission as well? You know, how can we all support your mission? I believe in it, you know, obviously. So,
yeah, look, it would be great if you're interested in really helping support this mission. We would encourage you to check out Beans Is How, follow us on, you know, all the social channels, share content. We'd love to see what you're cooking around beans. We'd love you to share where you're finding beans on the menu in different places and hashtag that and let us know your favorite recipes and your content. Because what we want to do is really start this online conversation where people are seeing more and more beans come into their feeds. They're seeing that beans are really normalized. They're almost, you know, becoming that trend which people can see. And then it's also about sharing information. So when these myths come out, educate yourself so that you can then also educate others. So it might be listening to podcasts like the one that we're talking on now, where you can learn more and you can engage in that conversation in a more educated way. But Beans Is How's got a number of resources to do that. And we have every month more and more coming out. So we'd love to have people get involved or reach out and let me know.
Wonderful. I will definitely direct everybody and link all of your information. I will start tagging all of my recipes and Beans Is How just to kind of what I was going to say is I think a lot of people come to me and go, oh, I'm paleo. I don't eat legumes and grains. And so one of my posts that I put up there often is I'm just an omnivore trying to get other people to eat more beans, because I think there's this also stigma around it is like, oh, this is vegan or vegetarian food. And it's really, to me, it's not, it's health food. It's not vegan. It's not vegetarian. It's like part of our health food system, as you pointed out, historically has been around for a long time. So part of what I do here in North America, where we are obsessed with protein, is like, it's not either or, it's and, add beans.
Yeah. And I mean, that's where we're not saying that people need to be vegetarian even. We're saying that people just need to eat more beans. And at the end of the day, starting there is a good start. And I think we need to take down some of the barriers for people, as you're mentioning, for them to get involved. And so it's really about sort of really talking about how do you bring people in and get more people kind of engaged in that. And as you said, it's been a part of our food systems for generations, and we need to rediscover some of that wisdom that was there.
Yeah, and it's wild that when you see these books like Paleolithic, you know, like the paleo diet and stuff like that, yeah, but where are the beans and grains? Like as soon as we could start cooking, you know, we were cooking whatever we could. If you look at us, we don't have sharp teeth, and we don't run fast. Anything can kill us. So we were scavengers. I'm pretty sure we were scavengers until we figured other stuff out. But so our diet had to be pretty varied, would be my assumption. Is there anything else that you would like people to know?
Yeah, I mean, look, just we'd love you to tag us in anything that you see that's really interesting around beans. We'd love to kind of help elevate that. We're really keen to champion people that are already working in this space and really get that out there. So just keep us in the loop on that. And we'd love to, yeah, see if there's other ways. I also have a number of people. I've just started a podcast called Future Fork, which is looking at food system transformation more broadly. So I'd love you to check out some of that. There is a bit of bean action on there, but it's not only about beans. And so if you're interested in finding out also some broader kind of conversations around food, then please take a look.
I definitely am. This is an area where I'm incredibly interested and would love more education. I have to say that my eyes always kind of glaze over when I hear about how to end hunger, because I feel like it's such an overwhelming prospect. It's like, how do you tackle something so overwhelming that is happening in every country? I grew up in the United States and we grew up hungry. And we grew up eating beans. And it's like, how do you end this epidemic? It feels like an overwhelming task that you're taking on. So in any way that I can help and support this movement, I definitely want to. And I know a lot of the people that I work with who are bean eaters, but also making that education accessible. Like, how do we get involved as everyday humans in this journey?
No, absolutely. And we try and share a lot of those kinds of tips and tricks. I think the thing is, there's no one way. It's a series of small changes that we need to make every day. And it's a mindset shift. And I think things like more diversity in our diets, more diversity in our understandings is really critical. And so I think it's learning and taking in those perspectives to try and understand what some of the solutions have been and how do we help move them forward.
Yeah, agreed. I did hear you mention somewhere else about food deserts. It's also, it seems like it's an education in those areas too.
Yeah.
Like they're not asking for beans, but wouldn't beans be such an incredible...
I think so. There's two parts that I see in that space. One is access. The other is information. And so often people might have access, but they don't have the information on how to utilize or use. Other places they might have information but no access. So they might want to have these kinds of ingredients but not have access to them. So I think you've got to look at it holistically. And so this is where you've got to also help educate people around how to cook. And I know this has come up in work that we've done even in inner city London, where you try and say to people, you should eat vegetables. And then they go, well, how do I even cook them? Or what do I do? I've got a broccoli. What do I do with it? And when you're on a very limited budget, it can be really challenging and actually quite counterproductive for people to say you should and shouldn't be doing all these things. And then you spend your little bit of budget thinking you're doing the right thing and your kids don't eat them, or and then you're wasting that food or that resource. And so it's something that we need to be more thoughtful on, and we need to be much more integrated in the way that we're sharing that information and access.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really drew my attention because I recently did nutrition for a Trekkers app. And believe it or not, Trekkers are one of the most unhealthy. In most countries, they're the most unhealthy because along Trekkers' routes, there's not a lot of food for them to eat.
Yes.
And so I created a whole kind of kit of like, keep beans in the cab. Yeah, beans. I'm like, yeah, go get your beans.
Amazing.
You know, the easy quick release top on a bean is really easy. You can stick a spoon in there. You can eat it right out of the can. Like, here's all these ways that you can actually be healthy on the road. And the big push, which I'll be interested once the app launches, of what the pushback will be, but it was just like, have these things in your house. And yeah, even canned vegetables are better than no vegetables. They're not tasty is the problem, but like, I just gave them all these tips so that they didn't have to eat fast food on the road, that they could actually have a lot of things that are sustainable in their cab. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I think we've got to think about these things and not guilt shame people into also as well. And I think that's what you've done in that work, it sounds, where you're saying, you know what, eating any vegetables in any form is better than eating none. And so it's like there's not a hierarchy here that we need to be thinking about. It's about understanding where people are at and how do you provide access and information.
And not sacrifice your health for your job.
Exactly.
If you can't eat something good on the road, keep things in your cab that you can eat that are a better option. So amazing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, good to chat, and I'm excited to collaborate more on driving forward the beans.
I will be the tag along, being like, yeah, what he said, eat the beans.
Absolutely. No, it's so great.
Well, Paul, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast, for your interest in the work that I'm doing. I did want to remind you that my next women's 12-week group will start in September, and it will bump right into the holidays, giving you the tools and the foundation you need to navigate the holidays and take care of your wonderful health. You know, health is a lifelong commitment. Notice I didn't say it's a lifelong perfection. It's a lifelong commitment to the foundations of health. These foundations will support you throughout your entire life. These are the tools that I give you in my 12-week course. Obviously, if you are unwell, then you're digging yourself out of the hole before you just focus on the foundations, right? You're actually having to do a little bit more work, have a little bit more dedication, but also knowing that there's a finite amount of time, right? There's a million reasons to not get started. There's a million more to not keep going. Be the 1%. Be the one that keeps showing up. Good days, bad days, hard days. And I'll be here for you. Always. I hope wherever you are in this beautiful world, you're taking care of your incredible health, your incredible body, and I'll see you next time. Bye.